Bolt-eyed as a girl, I unfurl full of fury. I am yelling, and I could not tell you what. I wrench away from Elcero and push the man back hard. My quick motion excites Viralata, who begins barking, drawing the men's attention as I sprint away. Angry tears, the first I've shed, stream down my face. I feel as if I swam too close to a stingray. My skin vibrates, electric to the touch. I turn my back on the beach. I run all the way home. I rush home only to remember tonight is a ceremonial night. Tia taught me to dance at the ceremonies, to the drums of the santero. She taught me a person moves not only with their body but with their spirit, to the santero's chanting and the chanting of the others. I watch Tia spin, the colorful beads around her neck wet with sweat. Oh, how her waist bent like a willow tree during the onslaught of a storm. I learn how low to the ground my knees could get, how my back could roll and my chest could heave. My wrapped hair was a plush throne for the spirits to reign from. Everyone knew this was a house blessed by saints, and although a lot of people don't fuck with that kind of thing here, they were always asking for Tia's remedios and jarabes, for advice and prayer, for assistance with birthing their babies when their doctors were too expensive, or when they've been told, there's just nothing else we can do. And when Tia hosts a ceremony, the crowd outside is legion. She has a touch, they say. She has the saint's ears. Tonight, the santero comes, and the practitioners do too. In our small yard out back, the drummers form a circle. Although we are grieving, the songs spring forth full of light. There is something holy in the night air. I push the air with my body, as if pushing Elcero and his friends. I pray myself free of pain as I spin in the circle. I pray myself free of fear as I throw my arms out wide. I pray myself free with head tosses, with bracelets jangling. I pray myself free.
Yahaira. Everyone in the house is feeling some type of way. And since it's only me and Mommy, what I mean is we are tiptoeing around. Mommy pads through the house, writing checks for bills I didn't even know we had. Mommy is spending money on a promise. She is spending money we don't even truly have yet. She ignores work, forgets appointments. I do not recognize this reckless woman who has taken residence in my mother's body, but I also don't want her to leave a place I know is safe. So I say nothing. I make her lunch she doesn't touch, and I climb through the Johnson's window when I need to hear noise around me. If tension is a winged monster, it casts its feathers on the roof of my house. 23 days after. Now that school's done, I walk the streets without purpose. I walk far north along Riverside Drive. Sometimes I walk down to Lincoln Center so I can sit by the fountain. I avoid dog shit and the people hanging on their stoops. I ignore ice cream trucks and hurled cat calls. I put one foot in front of the other, and every evening I land at Dre's front door. Dr. Johnson has wet hands from washing dishes. She sprays me with water when gesturing me in. She wraps an arm around my shoulders, presses her chin to the top of my head. I stand there for a second, then step away. It's nice to be in a home that feels the same way it did a month ago, to eat dinner that has no sour reminders. I let the noises of a whole family lull me into sleep. Dr. Johnson asks, Yaya, honey, have you been sleeping? I answer, kinda, Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson asks, do you want to talk about it? I answer, nah, Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson asks, have you talked to anyone about your grief? I answer, thanks for the meatloaf, Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson asks, Maybe you and your mommy?
I answer, Dr. Johnson, I really cannot do this. Dr. Johnson asks, but couldn't you all give those meetings another try? I answer, I think I'll go home now. I never had meatloaf until the Johnsons moved next door. It's kinda like a pastelón and kinda like a meatball on steroids. At least once a week, I used to eat at the Johnsons, even though Mommy fussed. She said the neighborhood would think she wasn't feeding me. And I remember thinking Mommy was silly, until Doña Gonzalez from upstairs asked me if I was allergic to Mommy's cooking. But besides the busybodies, I've loved that the Johnsons never minded my presence. And Dre and I would watch TV after dinner or play with her mother's makeup. But although I love the Johnsons, I'm not sure I can go back there. I can't look at Dr. Johnson with her soft, sad eyes, despite the relief I felt before in their home. I can't be in a place that's gone on as if my father never existed. 25 days after. My cousin Wilson shows up at the house on Tuesday afternoon and sits at the kitchen table, hugs Mommy tight, compliments her hair. She runs a hand through the strands that I swear she hasn't washed in 4 weeks. Wilson takes a deep breath, says he wants to marry his girlfriend, how he's too afraid to ask. Mommy and I look awkwardly at each other, congratulate him, but Wilson shakes his head. A campesino like me, what have I got to offer? Wilson has lived in New York City since he was 10. He's definitely not a campesino anymore. I don't know any peasant rocking designer sweatpants and Tom Ford cologne. Don't know any rural Dominican who drinks only expensive whiskey. But Wilson says the ring he wants to buy his girlfriend is out of his price range. And I want to know, what's a bank teller's price range? And did his girl care about price range when she got with him? But Mommy simply gets up from the table and grabs her checkbook. I turn away as she slides the check on the table. But before I do, I see she wrote down four figures. Cucarachas is what I want to call my mother's family. How the last few days they started creeping up from the woodwork. These same cousins who called me ugly want to suck up and say how beautiful I've grown, how tragic the loss of my father. The aunts and uncles who said my mom should have married a lighter-skinned man all of a sudden want to tell my mother about this new liposuction procedure they want, or a church mission trip they've been meaning to take, a dream wedding they can't afford, or hospital bills they haven't paid. Since learning about the advance, someone new visits every day, and soon my tongue morphs into a broom. Pa' fuera, all of you, leave us alone. We're not a fucking bank. Mommy says I'm being rude by turning family away. I tell her her family is rude by asking for money. Mommy says this is what family does, helps each other. I tell her our family should be helping us plan the funeral. Mommy doesn't say this is a difficult time. I tell her, Mommy, I'm not sure you're thinking straight. Mommy looks away from me and gets up to leave the kitchen. I ask her what it is she isn't saying. Mommy stops at the doorway, her back to me. I brace my arms for impact. Mommy tells me, you always loved him so much. I nod silently. At least that much is true. Mommy says, even as smart as you are, you ignored the signs. I don't ask her what she means, but she keeps talking anyway. Mommy tells me, I wish I'd stopped loving Yano a long time ago. I don't have to ask if that's a lie. Mommy tells me, you don't know how he's embarrassed me. I want to cover my ears like a little girl. Mommy tells me, and if this death money will unshame me with my family, so be it.
Camino. 28 days after. I've been avoiding the beach for days. I stretch my arms wide on my bed and my legs too. I fan my hair out all around me. Inside me, something has shrunk, but I want to be deserving of all the space around me, even as I realize this space might not be ours for long. I think about the electric bill for the generator, the phone bills, the internet bill, the school tuition. I think about Columbia. I think about New York City. Thea tells me the funeral will be covered by my father's wife. My stomach turns over at the thought. My father's secret wife. My father's secret life. What I've wished and worked for. Sand running through my fingers. I do not ask Thea, but am pretty sure this other girl has my same last name. Papi was married to her mother, just like mine. Yahaira is a great name, and I wonder if he picked it. I could see my father lovingly saying the syllables. I searched the internet for this name. It means to light or to shine, and I wonder if she was a bulb in my father's heart. I wonder if she was so bright he kept returning for her when he could have stayed here with me. I wonder if she's known about me her whole life. I wonder if her light was why he was there when she was born. I'm the child her father left her for in the summers, while she is the child my father left me for my entire life. I do not want to hate a girl with a glowing name, but I cannot help the anger planted in my chest, fanning its palm leaves wide and casting a shadow on all I've known. I wonder what kind of girl learns she is almost a millionaire, and doesn't at all wonder about the girl across the ocean she will be denying food, tuition, a dream, unless she doesn't know about me. I wonder what college she wants to go to. I wonder if she will now be able to afford it. They have ignored me my whole life, those people over there. But one thing I learned from the saints, when the crossroads are open to you, you must decide a path. I will not stand still while the world makes my choices. This Yahaira will learn what carving your own way means. Social media seemed like the easiest way to search 2 hours ago. But with so many girls named Yahaira Rios, I haven't stopped scrolling faces, trying to find a girl who looks like me. I am about to quit when I see a profile, but the picture is only a black box and the date my father died. Although the profile is private, I can see some posts, including condolence messages. Diojano was a great man. He's in heaven now, R.I.P., a boy named Wilson has written. I will always miss Pops, writes a girl named Andrea, and my heart thumps in my chest. And my fingers shake over the tablet as I press the message button. I write a quick sentence and press send before I can stop myself. There is no way. She can't know who I am once she sees it. After I send the message, I refresh the page at least 50 times waiting for a response. I walk into the kitchen to get some crackers. I wash some dishes that are in the sink. I dust the altar, refill the vases with fresh water, then return to my tablet. Still no response. There is no time difference where my sister is, which means it is late afternoon. Maybe she is busy, being rich and hanging out with her mother and not thinking about me. I check the message one more time. It does not show it's been read. It does not show it's been opened. I almost wish I could unsend the message, but no, she deserves to read it. I deserve to know and be known. I turn off my tablet. Thea and I go to El Malecón, where my parents re-met. She carries a fresh jar of molasses and a watermelon. I haul the honeyed rum. La Virgen de Regla loves sweets. Thea and I pray over the offerings, reciting the names of our ancestors. We kiss the rind, the jar, the glass bottle holding the rum. We touch these items to our foreheads. Then we touch them to our hearts. I breathe the salty air. The rush of waves against stone joins us in our prayers. We pour a bit of homemade mamajuana into the water. And Thea, doesn't even stop me when I take a sip from the bottle. I am feeling guilty. I wonder if the girl in New York didn't know about me. If a random message online might be a heavy thing to carry. At least I had Thea's honest and open face tell me the truth, not a random pixelated image. I pour my thick guilt into the water as well. The patron saint of the ocean is known for containing many parts of herself. She is a nurturer, but she is also a ferocious defender. And so I remember that to walk this world, you must be kind, but also fierce. After our trip to El Malecón, I walk back home and straight into my room. I pull out my tablet and turn it back on. My breath catches in my chest. I search social media, still no notification. I stop myself just before I throw the tablet at the wall. I was not born to patience. I grab a sack and load it with a small bag of rice and one of beans. Soon, I don't know how Thea and I will eat, but for now we still have more than the other people who live here. I walk to Carlene's, waving to neighbors, avoiding potholes, letting the sun warm the skin on my back. At her house, Maman ushers me in, her eyes tired, and when I look at Carlene, I can tell she's been crying. I pass the sack to Maman, giving her an extra tight hug, hoping it offers comfort. She hugs me tightly back, and for a second, I think she is also offering comfort to me. When she walks out back to El Fogón, the open fire where she cooks, I sit on the couch and gently pull Luciano from Carlene and onto my chest. I can tell she doesn't want to let him go, but also that she needs a moment to collect herself. I do not ask what happened. She tells me herself. I lost my job. They wanted me to start coming in, but how could I leave him so soon? How? I nod along, humming to Luciano. His lashes flutter against his small dark cheek. I read somewhere that even this little, when they sleep, babies can dream. Since I do not have my father's pull, I cannot make empty promises about jobs or positions I can get for Carlene. I just wish I could stay with my baby. If only I could make miracles like Thea. Thea already has an apprentice. Me. And even I cannot wield miracles the way she can. I don't want to make light of what Carlene just told me. I also know she needs a distraction, so I tell her about my sister. I tell her I reached out. Carlene gasps at all the right moments and clutches my hand. She nods in agreement. You did what you had to do, Camino. I am not the kind of girl who looks for approval. But a weight lifts off my chest. I did what must be done.
Yahaira. The last time I saw my parents kiss, I was pretty small. But it's still hard to hear that your own mother wasn't happy. Papi was always smiling, always full of words and joy. I wish I knew the rift that grew the sea between them. I used to think it was me, that Papi and I had chess, that maybe Mommy was jealous. It wasn't something she shared. But even when I started painting nails and asking about her job, Mommy still had an air around Papi, like he was a medicine she knew she needed, even as she cringed at the taste. But now I wonder if it was always more than that. Maybe Mommy knew about the other woman, even without seeing the certificate. I think of how the word unhappy houses so many unanswered questions. 31 days after. Tia Lidia comes to dinner Monday night. It is mostly silent until she asks me about my college essay. I mention I'm rethinking the schools I want to apply to. Mommy looks up from her plate of arroz con guandules, surprised. Just because I'm not your father doesn't mean I don't care. You didn't tell me you scrapped your list, Yahaira. We only have each other, you know, and he always had more people in his life than he needed. Her tone is a serrated knife. I become a feast of anger. But before I can reply to her, she throws her fork down on the plate and leaves, dragging her footsteps so her chancletas slur drunkenly to her room. De Alidia puts her hand over mine. Your mother is having a tough time. Their marriage wasn't easy, and she has so much she's dealing with. Yano was a great father to you, and I know you loved him, but he wasn't always a great husband. And I don't know how one man can be so many different things to the people he was closest to. But I nod. I almost slip and ask, does everyone know? But if they don't, I can't be the one to reveal the dirt on my father's name. Once, I had a tournament in Memphis. Both Mommy and Papi came. It's a happy memory, not just because I won, but because we went on a boat tour of the Mississippi River, and the sun shone bright, and the tour guide had this amazing voice that made you want to lean into his words, and he kept saying, "Ships have gone down in this water. Gold has been lost here. The banks have eroded. Cities have been built and destroyed at its shores. Tribes have crossed it and never crossed back. But the Mississippi rises and falls. It rises and falls. Everything changes, but the water rises and falls." And for some reason, I think of that memory and that tournament as Mommy huffs around the house. Some things continue forever. Maybe anger is like a river. Maybe it crumbles everything around it. Maybe it hides so many skeletons beneath the rolling surface. 35 days after. For the first time in weeks, I log on to social media. I have comments from friends, I have reminders of birthdays and events, and I have one new friend request from a girl I don't know in Sosua, Dominican Republic. She has my same last name, Rios, Camino Rios. She is slightly lighter complexion than my velvet brown, her eyes are big and piercing, and her smile looks familiar. There is a message with the request, but I can't stop looking at her profile picture. Because this Camino girl isn't alone in the photo. She is in a red bathing suit, my father's arm thrown around her shoulders as they laugh in the sunlight. An awful sinking feeling almost stops my breath. A feeling I cannot name is growing in my chest. It is large and large and large, and before it expands inside my throat and chokes me, I yell for Mommy. She shuffles into the room with more speed than I've seen her demonstrate in days. I point to the screen. "Have you seen this picture? I don't know this girl. Why is he with this girl?" On a hard breath, she slaps her hand against her chest as if trying to press a pause button on her heart. "Who is this, Ma? A cousin I don't know about? Who is this?" But I can see my guesses are wrong. "I know he was your hero, Yahaira, and I tried my best to make sure he would remain so. But that girl is the daughter from your father's other family." My father not only had another wife, he also had another child. I have to close my laptop because all my shaking hands want to do is sweep the entire thing off my desk. I want to see the image of my father and this girl shattered against the floor. How could an entire person exist who shares half my DNA and no one thought to tell me? In all the time I held what I thought was a massive secret, I never imagined there could be a child from my father's secret marriage, or perhaps my father's not-so-secret marriage, since it seems everyone else still knew more than me.
even mommy, who I was trying to protect. It's taken me almost 12 months to deal with the truth of who my father was. But even that was a lie. My stomach churns, and I feel myself about to be sick. I bend my face forward, and mommy puts a hand on my back, but I pull away from her. All these lies that we've all swallowed, they're probably rotting in our stomachs. I knew about his wife, I tell mommy. I can't believe no one told me. She shakes her head. But how? We didn't want to burden you. I wave my hand at the computer. This, I didn't know about. This person, I couldn't imagine. I am taking big, gasping breaths. Mommy does not try to rub my back again, but she gently whispers to me, Respira, Yahaira, respira, así, nice, big breaths. I feel like a spool of thread that's been dropped to the ground. I'm rolling undone from the truth of this thing. A sister, a sister, a sister. Ma tries to explain things to me, but I feel like I've been dropped into a part of the story where all of the characters are unfamiliar. She was my friend, his other wife. I actually met him through her. He married the other woman after her, so it wasn't technically legal, but the other woman didn't know that until much, much later. Mommy married my father against her own father's wishes. My maternal grandfather was high up in the military and wanted mommy to marry someone of rank. My mother says she almost died when she learned of Papi's betrayal. All the people she dismissed when marrying Papi, only to have him betray her a few months after they wed. She cannot get through the story without her voice breaking my entire heart. And then she tells me what I did not expect. She's dead, his wife. Did you know? Almost 10 years ago. Your father never got over it. Neither did I. I used to wish she'd go away, but it was unthinkable the way it happened. I want to hate this dead woman for the way even talking about her twists up my mother's face. This dead woman who made my father visit and have a child and board a plane that fell into the ocean. I am slow to put the pieces together. I want to hate a dead woman and her daughter, who most likely hates me for making my father leave her in the first place. Without thinking, I ask Mommy why. Mommy sifts through her thoughts as if trying to figure out what I'm really asking. And I mean all of it. Why would Papi do this to her? To us? He told me once, with me, he felt like he had to perform, become a character in a play. He had to prove he was good enough, that he had earned the right to marry the heralded general's only child. But with her, with the woman who was my friend, who was his childhood friend, he could take off the mask. I was an aspiration, a flame he wanted to kiss. But for her, he would have lit the entire island. I was a smart decision. She made a dreamer of him. And well, for the child that came, he sacrificed it all. He loved you both. Understand that. A part of me even thinks he might have loved me and his other wife too. Yano was a complicated man. After she died, I refused to have the child here. It was all too much. I don't know. I can't explain. Your father refused not to be in her life. He would not abandon her completely. I know now I should not have asked it of him.
So he created a theater of his life and got lost in all the different roles he had to play. Mommy seems so tired after telling me what she knows, and I feel so tired just hearing it. I do not want to speak to Mommy anymore. She must realize I need a break from her, from this, because she kisses me goodnight and only sighs when I do not say the words back. I know, in the place inside me that is still clear and fair, this is not my mother's fault. But I'm just so damn tired of being lied to, and she is the only one who is here for me to be angry at. I sit and stare at the message Camino Rios sent me. I sit and stare at the picture of my father proudly hugging a child that is not me. I could delete the message. I should delete the message. Why say a single thing to this girl I do not know? I will decline her friend request.
Camino. When I get home from picking up my report card, there is a notification shining blue on my tablet. It's been days since I sent the message. I stopped believing she'd ever see it. I stopped checking it incessantly. But now, here is a response. Thea asks me if I want something to eat, but I feel so queasy. I don't think I could. I unlock the tablet and take a deep breath. There is shock in the list of questions the girl, Yahaira, has sent my way. And it is clear she did not know I existed. Message from Yahaira Rios. How old are you? Did Papi live with you when he visited? Where in the Dominican Republic do you live? Have you ever been to the States? Who do you live with there? Do you have other siblings? How did you learn Papi had died? I think we need to video chat. As far back as I've had memory to keep me company, it's been Thea and me making an existence. Papi, someone who was only present by voice and pixelated face, and by his summer visits that were always too short, I was not the kind of child who wanted siblings or someone to play with my hair. Sometimes, I would miss the mother I barely knew, but mostly, Thea was all the parent I needed, all the family I thought I wanted. It is strange to go from being an only child to seeing someone wearing your own face. Now there's this other person, and supposedly she is my sister. Where yesterday she was just a name holding the future I thought I wanted, now there's a girl of blood and flesh who is, second only to Thea, as the closest thing I have to family. I do not reply to her. Even though I know the message will show as read, I take a moment to figure out what it is I want to say. I am nervous to admit to Thea what I've done, that I've reached out and told her my father's secret. I exist. I must make a sound. Because Thea looks up from her reading, or maybe in her magic way she just knows. Our backyard rooster crows an evening song. I reached out to Yahaira, Bobby's girl. She responded. Thea puts down her book but is otherwise silent. She wants to talk. She wants to video chat. And it comes as a surprise to me, but all of a sudden I'm crying. The sob pulled up from the well in my chest, full and wet, and Thea must have been expecting it. She scoops me to her. Ya, mija. Ya. Ya, mija, ya. What I respond to this, Yahaira. Hello. Yes. We should talk.
Yahaira, you're in this square, and squares don't overlap. Papi taught me every piece has its own space. Papi taught me every piece moves in its own way. Papi taught me every piece has its own purpose. The squares do not overlap, and neither do the pieces. The only time two pieces stand in the same square is the second before one is being taken and replaced. And I know now, Papi could not move between two families. When he was here, he was mine. When he was there, he was theirs. He would glide from family to family, square to square, and never look back. It's why I heard so little from him when he was gone. It's why the girl in DR needed to message me to confirm I am my father's daughter. Everything has a purpose, Papi taught me. But what was his in keeping such big secrets? 36 days after. We eat in silence. We haven't sat at the dinner table since Papi. Instead, we bring plates to the couch and pretend to eat with them in our laps. I haven't seen Mommy wear makeup in weeks, and her chancletas are the only footwear she rocks these days. Between commercials, I play on my phone. Now that school's out, I don't even have homework to distract me from the silence, which is why I'm surprised today when Mommy mutes her novela to say, "We need to make plans for your future. We are the only family we have left." Because Mommy did not want to legally fight Papi's will, after Papi's remains are released to us, he'll be flown back to DR to be buried. Mommy refuses to talk about the body. After she goes to bed, I begin doing research on what I would need to travel. It is funny how money has no regard for time, how it eases past minutes to get you what you want. Thankfully, I have a passport. Papi had me get one years ago when it became clear I might qualify for tournaments abroad. For a ticket, I use Mommy's credit card. Mommy does not remove any passwords from our computer, and I log onto her bank account and ensure we have enough. I still don't know if I have the courage to do what I want to do, and I know I can't plan this trip alone, but somehow, some way, I know I need to be there the day that Papi gets buried. I need to meet this sister. I don't know how much of my desire to meet Camino is because all of a sudden, I have a sister, and that's very what the fuck, but also, maybe a part of me feels that she is a piece of Papi, that in her body there will be answers for all the questions he left behind. How could she have existed this whole time without me? Me without her? Nothing has been logical since the morning Mommy came to school, but in my heart of hearts I know whatever I need to find, I'll need to go. 37 days after. Mommy has not asked me again about the online message, and I have not given her any updates. I told Dre because holding it in was killing me. She shook her head and pushed a loud whistle through her teeth. Damn, who would have thought Papa Rios had it in him? After a moment, she said, "Maybe it's better you didn't know." How can you lose an entire person only to gain a part of them back in someone entirely new? I think I need to meet her. With Papi's body, I mean. Dre nods without hesitation. Yes, it's the right thing to do. And although her words should be a comfort, a twinge of annoyance twists my mouth. How could she possibly know the right thing to do? In a situation like this, how would anyone know so easily right from wrong? When it all seems like we are pivoting left, spinning in circles.
Camino. I think I hate this sister. She messages me that she has acquired a plane ticket and how easy she says it because it wasn't endless paperwork. Because no one wondered if she would want to overstay her visa. The years my father tried to get me to the States. And that girl over there fills out a short form, is granted permission, given a blue book, shit, an entire welcome mat to the world. I squeeze my tablet so hard, I'm surprised I don't crack the screen. Her mother will not let her come, and she is planning to do so behind her back. That takes strength. I know if it were me, Thea would kill me dead, then have the spirits bring me back to life so she could murder me all over again. As much as I want to hate this girl, I also have to admire what she will do to get here. And I hope that she will admire all I will do to get there, too. 40 days after. It's been 3 weeks since Carlene gave birth. I visit her every few days. Today, carrying vitamins and cloth diapers on top of my head, I let my arms swing freely. When I was little, my mother told me she used to carry bundles of mangoes to the market this way. On mornings like this, I pretend I'm her, a girl who can carry water on her crown, who can walk barefoot without being scorched. Although, I'm wearing a pair of Jordans that I now think were probably my sister's first. They were not new when Poppy brought them to me, and I think back to all the hand-me-downs. I didn't know where that other girl's cast-offs. When I get to the house, Carlene is there alone. She chews on a thumbnail while little Luciano sleeps quietly in a crib. In another country, this baby would still be in the intensive care unit, but these are Creole-speaking folk who cannot afford either the bill or the legalities that would come with hospitals. Although Carlene will not utter the words, I know she still expects the baby to die. He is just so, so small. Carlene takes the bundle from me slowly and unwraps it like it might contain precious gems. I ask her if I can wake the baby to check if he's doing all right. Thea has taught me how to listen to the baby's hearts and swab their throats for mucus. She has taught me how to feel the neck for fever, to look for infection where the cord was cut. Carlene nods, but gives me a long look. And I know her eyes are telling me to be careful. We are friends, but she is a mother now, and she is wary of anyone hurting her child. She tells me Nelson is working himself to the bone trying to save enough to move them out and is also considering dropping out of school. I want to offer her platitudes and murmurs that it will all be all right. But thing is, this isn't an uncommon story. A lot of people don't finish school or follow their dreams. That fairy tale plotline is for telenovelas. Instead of saying soft, nice words, I fold clean towels and stack dirty dishes. I sweep and make myself useful. It is the best kind of gift I can offer Carlene. My father having two families is also not an uncommon story. When Yahaira messaged me, she seemed unutterably betrayed, as if she couldn't believe this of Poppy. But me? I know a man can have many faces and speak out of both sides of his mouth. I know a man can make decisions based on the flip of a coin. A man can be real good at long division, give away piece after piece after piece of himself. I do not tell Carlene any of this. I hand her back the child. I promise to check on her again next week. She asks me if I've heard back about the message I sent. But I do not know how to pucker my mouth around the words I want to say. What does another burden do for Carlene? And a part of me feels shame. It is then I know my father has become a secret, even from my dearest friend. He's become an unspeakable name. All I want is Poppy back. I want his booming laugh to shake the walls. I want his heavy knock to the outside door. I want his stupid sayings and his angry bellow and his mixed up English he would pepper in conversation and his eyes that misted over when he prayed or when he danced. There are pieces of him all over this barrio. all over República Dominicana, and beyond that, to New York City, but I can't bundle those pieces, can't tie them tight with twine, can't blow life into them, or shed light onto them, or assemble those pieces to make anything, anyone, resembling him. The news no longer shares updates about the plane crash. There are more important or current tragedies to cover. Throughout the neighborhood, people keep candles lit in windows, and every time I walk by a storefront, someone tips their hat and asks if I need anything. The rest of the world has moved on to bigger and juicier news. So many of us here seem suspended, in time, still waiting for more information, still hoping this is a nightmare we'll wake from. 42 days after. My skin itches from missing the sea. I force myself to help Thea with her cough syrups and making her rounds until I snicker one time too many beneath my breath. Thea waves her hand in my face. Te fuiste lejos. And she's right. My mind drifted off far away. When was the last time you went swimming? You're just like your mother. She was always happiest when she was near the water. It's why she loved visiting El Malecón. And I know I can't avoid the water forever, especially not now. In my room, I hold my swimsuit up to my nose, and the scent of laundry soap is a small comfort. What are arms in the water if not wings? I slice through the liquid sky, push the water behind me. I move with a speed I've never moved with before. Out into the ocean and back, until my wings again become arms that are aching and my lungs need big gulps of air. I push onto my back and float. The curved spoon of moon peeks through clouds. When I open my eyes to the sand, there he is. There he always fucking is. You were swimming as if demons were chasing with torches behind you. I roll my shoulders before walking calmly to shimmy into my shorts. Pretend not to see, El Cero checking out my ass from where he's crouching. Is this where you want me, Camino? Begging at your feet? The body is a funny piece of meat, how it inflates and deflates in order to keep you alive, but how simple words can fill you up or pierce the air out of you. El Cero gives me more goosebumps than freezing water, and never the kind that means you're moved, always the kind that means run hard and fast in the other direction. I don't want anything from you, but he shakes his head almost sadly. You need me. Leave me alone, Cero. Just leave me the hell alone. On my way home from the beach, I get caught in the rain. Thea is stirring an asopao in a huge pot. The rice and meat stew fills the house with the scent of bay leaves. She gives me a look and points her large metal spoon at my tablet. That thing has been chirping, and you're lucky. I didn't put it on the porch so the rain could shut it up. Turn the volume down on that thing. Although Papi was not her brother, she'd known him forever. I have yet to ask her how she's doing. The notifications on my tablet pop up in long succession. Esa Yahaira wants to video chat. And the thought of that makes my palms sweaty. What will I see in the face of this girl? Am I ready to see it? Yahaira and I are supposed to video chat after dinner, but the appointed time has passed and I still dawdle in the kitchen, washing dishes and putting away the leftovers in recycled margarine containers. Thea shuffles to her room to watch a novela and shuts her door. I take my tablet to the porch although the tiles are still wet, although the Wi-Fi is faintest here. It's almost as if I want a reason not to speak to the girl. I have missed two calls. And 5 minutes later, my tablet chimes. The porch light is faint, but when I answer, the light behind the girl is bright, bright, bright.
and as her face comes into focus, my heart stops. She has Poppy's face, his tight curls, his broad nose. Her lips are shaped different but full like his. My sister is pretty, darker than me, and clearly eating better, yet I know that strangers in the street would look at us and peg easily that we are related. We are of the same features. Neither of us says a word. On the screen, beyond where she can see my hand, I trace her chin with my finger. And for the first time, I don't just feel loss. I don't just feel a big gaping hole at everything. My father's absence has consumed. Look at what it spit out and offered. Look at who it's given me.
Yahaira. Camino is like a golden version of me, with long loose curls hanging wet down her back. She tells me she likes to swim and was at the beach. She has the look of a swimmer, long-limbed, thin. She doesn't smile much on the call, and I press my shaky hands together. I don't want her to see that I'm nervous. We don't spend much time chit-chatting. In fact, for the first couple of seconds, we are completely silent. I memorize her features and puzzle piece her face, see my own there, and Poppy's. I compare what our mothers must have given us, but I suspect if I say any of this out loud, Camino will shut down. She does not offer me many long sentences, and her face shows no enthusiasm to connect. She seems like she is not the type to deal with emotions well. So I move to what I know how to do. Strategy. I outline what I'm thinking, my plans for attending the funeral, and then I tell her what I'll need from her. She is silent a moment, slow to agree. And the way her forehead wrinkles looks just like Poppy's used to when he was trying to figure out if I had laid a trap down for his king to fall into. Finally, she nods. 43 days after. I can't remember the last time Mommy and I went shopping together. We don't got the same taste at all. Every Christmas and birthday, Mommy will buy me cute little rompers and low-cut shirts, and I'll have to throw on leggings under or a button down on top. Not that I don't look cute, but just that our styles don't necessarily match. And it's easy to remember why. Mommy is a showpiece of a woman. Her long hair, sleek and shiny, down to the middle of her back. Jeans tighter than mine, tight shirt too. She doesn't look like an American apple pie mother. She looks like a tres golpes of a mother. And I've forgotten that these last weeks she's piled her hair into rollers and rocked nothing but dusty sweats and slippers. But it's obvious now, as dudes eye her as we walk, I walk, Mommy swishes her big butt. She's just every kind of feminine, and I've never been sure I'd measure up. Camino would probably be thought her daughter before me. I grab Mommy's hand and move closer to her. A childish move, I know, but a reminder to all of us, she is mine, and only mine. You ever wish I looked more like you? That people looked at you and didn't have to wonder at our relationship? Mommy looks startled by the question. Y esa ridicule. What you mean, looked more like me? You look just like me. Your heart-shaped mouth, your fat big toe, your ears like seashells, your eyes, same brown as mine. You got your father's coloring, kinked hair, and stubbornness. But the rest of you is all me. And anyone that can't see that, que se vayan al carajo. Mommy is annoyed. I can tell by the pinched jawline. The same way my jaw looks pinched when I'm annoyed. Everyone always said I look just like Poppy. For some reason, I want to keep pushing her. I want her to defend all the parts of her that live in me. Ay, mamita. Mommy's face smooths out. We are standing still on the sidewalk, and the hustle and bustle of Grand Concourse, the people running in and out of shops, fade away. The heat sticks to our bodies, a second skin. I take a deep, warm breath. People loved to say you were your father's daughter. And you? You loved to hear it. I'm sure you've always thought me silly or superficial or qué sé yo, too girly. You've always been the best of daughters and already so beautiful.